Welcome to the Changing State of Talent Acquisition, where your hosts, Graham Thornton and Martin Pred, share their unfiltered takes on what's happening in the world of talent acquisition today. Each week brings new guests who share their stories on the tools, trends, and technologies currently impacting the changing state of talent acquisition. Have feedback or want to join the show? Head on over to changestate.io. And now, on to this week's episode.
All right, and we are back for another episode of the Changing State of Talent Acquisition podcast. We have a first for the episode. We have two guests joining us today from Uber. Excited to bring on Xavi Martinez and Delfina Stabile from Uber. So, where we always like to start is, we'll start with you, Delfina. Let's talk about, you know, sharing your journey into HR and talent acquisition, and, you know, we'll go with your current role over at Uber and how you're spending your day.
Sounds good. All my experience previous to Uber, it's always in recruiting and talent acquisition back in Argentina. I actually started in Michael Page. I spent a couple years there, then moved to a boutique headhunting firm also in Buenos Aires. That firm was specialized in exec recruiting for the tech industry. And then over 4 years ago, I moved to Uber and I spent a couple of years in the LATAM team working from Mexico City. I started recruiting, then managing recruiting teams. And by the end, I was also managing the team of recruiting coordinators. And last year, I moved to the global talent acquisition operations team and started building the employer brand strategy and team. And I've been managing this talent attraction team since then. And I just relocated to San Francisco.
Fantastic. Well, great burritos in San Francisco. My love of the California burritos is many years old, but we won't get to that today. So Xavi Martinez, love for you to share your similar journey over into Uber as well.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I also want those burrito recommendations because I'm from San Francisco. I started around 15 years ago my career in recruitment as well. Started in recruitment on the agency side in Spain, and then later on moved to the Netherlands, where I spent 10 years of my career. I moved into my first in-house role in tech recruiting with the company TomTom, which is a navigation device company, and quickly moved into HR technology and operations and information systems with them until getting into global leadership roles there. And after TomTom, I joined Philips, where I joined the integrated talent management team, and I was in charge of executive search programs and employer brand until I finally made it to Uber over 5 years ago now. And at Uber, I've always been in talent acquisition operations, started with the company in the EMEA headquarters in Amsterdam, and slowly grew my responsibilities over time and moved to San Francisco 3 years ago, and I'm currently responsible for our strategic initiatives team. And that encompasses our project management office, the talent attraction team, and also operational excellence and continuous improvement.
Perfect. And then, you know, one of the things that, you know, I think we love about this is, you know, Uber and employer branding falls under strategic initiatives. And, you know, I think it's exciting when, you know, companies, you know, really lean into the importance of, you know, building, you know, and maintaining your employer brand. You know, we had noticed and heard Uber on the podcast around, you know, what tech talent is looking for beyond salary is, I think, the title. You know, so I think that's a good jumping off point. So, you know, the labor market, tech talent, you know, even before, you know, the labor shortage that we're all in now, tech talent was already in pretty high demand. You know, I think we saw a lot of employers that, you know, regularly job hopping, you know, from company to company, particularly in the Bay Area. You know, have you seen that trend intensify in the past 6 months? You know, what are you seeing from a tech talent, you know, standpoint, you know, since COVID has hit?
Yeah, absolutely. That trend is definitely intensifying. We are in a candidates market at the moment. We all see that the economy has been recovering and many jobs are being created. I was actually reading yesterday that that in the US, like, there were over 10 million jobs created in August, and a record of 4.3 million people quit their jobs in the same period of time. So of course, people have more choices, right? And they're going to be asking for more, for better conditions, better salary benefits, or a greater sense of purpose and growth opportunities. So definitely that trend is very present.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's interesting, right? So, you know, pre-COVID, remote work was definitely a lever that, you know, we saw often pulled, right? Companies that were offering remote work or, you know, even flexible remote schedules was definitely a lever, right? And it was, you know, compensation was the other lever. And I think, you know, a lot of organizations now, you know, realizing that, boy, you know, if we were a small startup and it was remote, you know, 2 years ago, that's no longer a differentiator in tech talent in particular. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm curious, maybe at a high level, you know, in your surveys and studies within Uber, you know, what advice do you have for TA teams kind of, you know, that are looking to maintain relevance in, you know, in the war for tech talent, you know, beyond salary, beyond remote work?
Yeah, like we actually discussed this like plenty of times with the team, and I think not only as a strategic initiatives team, like as a people organization at Uber, we have realized that it's really important to continuously ask your employees what they need and adjust the policies and the offerings that you have for them accordingly. And I think that what we've seen with COVID is that the situation changed so fast that employees require different things at different times. So it's really important to keep a pulse on what's happening and really adjusting with the times, right? And I give you some example. At the beginning of the pandemic, we heard from our employees that they needed to equip their home offices and make themselves comfortable at home because suddenly everyone was working from home, right? And so we made sure that that people could pick up equipment from the offices safely and even offered extra stipends to the ones that needed it. And then we've noticed how things have been evolving, right? And continuously asking, we know that there's been a lot of challenges for caregivers. So we've been really encouraging no meeting days and making sure that that there's more flexibility in terms of working schedules, right? These are just a couple of examples that I'm giving you, right? But now with the opening of offices, what we're trying to do is to make sure that people can return to office in a very safe way. So the focus is different, right? A few months down the track.
Yeah, Chavi, you raise an interesting point. I mean, I think organizations for a long time have at least paid lip service to the idea of conducting regular surveys of their employees, finding out what employees want. But maybe the missing link, at least from where we sit, has been actually following through on the feedback that has been given to you. And right. More importantly than that, actually letting employees know what has been done in response to the feedback. Because I think, you know, conducting a survey and asking people what they're looking for, what we could be doing better, and then just making it feel like that's a black hole and nobody listened, that's actually probably worse than not asking at all.
Absolutely.
So I think that closing the loop and like, and actually communicating that, even if it's, you know, we can't give you everything you want, but we heard you and mm-hmm. We're making progress and this is what we're doing, I think is super important.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's also like a part of that you can do as a company that is communicating what differentiates you very clearly to your employee base and to your candidate base, right? And I mean, if you're a purpose-driven organization, right, like what is your purpose and how does that connect with people, right? Because in the case of Uber, we're very clear that we are about moving the world, and movement is a differentiating factor for us, right? So when it comes to our own talent, what we're trying to make them see is that we move our own talent, and that's a focus for us as a company as well, right? So having that, you know, that purpose clear and communicating it to your prospect employees is really, really important to be different and to attract the right talent for your organization.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have some questions for you because I know you guys recently kind of introduced a new EVP. We'll get to that in a moment. But before we do, I want to kind of ask a high-level question. You know, I think the employer brand function within an organization has traditionally been kind of a function without a clear home. Nobody quite knows where to put it. You see some organizations putting the employer brand under the sales and marketing function on the org chart. Others are putting it under HR, TA. And still others are putting it kind of on an island of its own. And I think there are, you know, pros and cons to each one of those structures. I'm wondering if you can just share your experience maybe with some of those different setups, what you see as the pros and cons. And, you know, if you were to say build an employer brand function from scratch, where would you place it? You know, what do you think the ideal setup is?
Yeah, I think I can take that. And that's clearly a challenge that we also had. And we've had like both settings in the past years. I don't think there's one correct answer to that question. And to be honest, as a company, we learn by doing and we learn as we go. And this is literally what we're doing. So I think what I would tell you is like, I don't think it matters so much where you place it. I think if whenever you decide where to place it, you need to make sure that you have a close partnership with the other team. And both teams really understand the value and the impact employer brand can have. Like if you see on the TA side, TA cares about like hiring targets and hiring efficiency and candidate experience. And of course, employer brand can really impact this directly. But if you go to the marketing side, they really care about the consumer brand and the positioning. And then they also really need to understand that employer brand has a direct impact on this as well. And they're closer than maybe people think. So I think what I would tell you is like, it could depend like on the company's priorities and if it's more strategic to place it under TA or under marketing. But again, like if the function exists, both teams need to see the value in it and there should be like a clear and direct partnership with both. And I think exactly by having this partnership, the trade-off of placing it under one or another will definitely be smaller. But again, I don't think there's a perfect solution. We really like the setting that we have right now, that it's living under TA, under strategic initiatives. And we are definitely working on that partnership with marketing to make sure that they also see the value and that we are, of course, aligned to what they are doing. But also we are really direct partners with TA on making sure we are helping them hiring, reaching their hiring targets.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. You know, and one thing that I think COVID has really sort of reinforced, you know, a lot of industries are struggling to hire, right? Whatever reports you want to read, you know, you walk by restaurants and, you know, restaurants are closed because they can't, you know, literally can't find, you know, people to cook, right? You try to get, you know, Marty and I live in Seattle, you know, you try to get a ferry to go to an island to visit my parents. Realize it's a unique problem maybe, but you know, they cancel half the boats because they don't have enough people to, you know, quick literally be on the ferry and drive the ferry. And like, you know, I think everyone knows that, you know, our supply chain is severely backed up and we have, you know, the most amount of barges just sitting off the coast in, you know, in LA and Long Beach because there's no one to unload them. And, you know, what that has really done, I think that's you really shined a light on the importance of recruiting. And probably now more than ever, executives are bought into the importance of, you know, investing in talent acquisition. And, you know, hopefully there ends up being some more, you know, downstream effects where like, hey, executives and leaders buy into the importance of investing in your employer brand, right? Investing in your employees. We're definitely seeing it on our side from, you know, an advertising perspective. You know, because, hey, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, like, hey, if you're a restaurant and you don't have anyone to cook the food, you probably can't be open. So we're definitely seeing that push. And I wonder if, you know, COVID is kind of going to have a similar, you know, sort of long-term, you know, effect where employer brand, you know, actually becomes a much more integral, you know, connection to the business. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And it resonates. And I think that what Delfina was saying as well is sometimes it's easier to talk about the immediate return on investment on recruitment marketing efforts with the teams, right? Because it's more tangible than it is to talk about, like, you know, things like awareness or like we will talk about ROI we can talk about ROI a bit later. But I think that, yeah, showing that that holistic value of the function is really important. And we do see our leadership team paying much more attention, and the investment that they're making in the team is a proof of that.
Yeah, and I think we had an opportunity this year of like with the great resignation and the such high number of open roles and low number of applicants, like we had the opportunity to show the value of paid marketing and paid media and a candidate acquisition. So I feel like this is going to remain, even if the numbers go to, if the market like goes a little bit more stable, I think our leaders already saw the value of paid media and doing candidate acquisition through these channels.
Yeah, Delfina, I really liked your point that there's really no ideal structure. I mean, it's kind of highly dependent on the organization where you want to place the employer brand function. What's probably more important than what the org chart looks like is, as you say, you know, how are we collaborating? Because I think that, you know, historically organizations have sometimes had trouble building bridges between talent acquisition, employer brand, and consumer marketing. You know, employer brand is a relatively new concept in the world of business, whereas, you know, consumer branding has been around for much longer. And I think part of the challenge is people just, the consumer marketing folks don't necessarily know what employer brand is. You know, it sounds similar to what they're doing, but they're not experts in talent acquisition. So it perhaps is a little bit threatening. And I just wondered if, you know, you could comment on,
any tips or success stories you can share about building those bridges with consumer marketing? Because I think all the examples Graham just raised make it clear that we really need to be collaborating closely. You know, we're on the same team here. If talent acquisition isn't doing a good job and we don't have a strong employer brand, then our consumer brand suffers too, because we can't, you know, deliver the products and services that the organization needs to go to market.
Yes, of course. And again, like, this is a work in progress on our side. Like, I don't think I have like the solution. I can talk about my experience, but definitely I think it's sometimes super easy to show the ROI on hires, because again, you do paid media and that's easiest to show. But then if you think about showing like really the impact that employer brand has on the consumer brand, it's a little bit harder, because again, this is more longer term, like changing perception. So it's a little bit harder to show like the value and the impact that we may have. And also, like, the truth, if you think about strategy, like if you think about like all the broader marketing efforts that a company may have, employer brand is like a small piece. So sometimes really showing them the importance, it's hard. An example like that I have, for example, is like in our candidate survey, we have a question that is more on, would you go back to using Uber products after your interview process? Are you going to use them more? Are you going to use them less? So like, with that question, like we can really try to show the marketing team that really, like, if we have candidates coming through our process, then their user experience like with the product may change as well. So yeah, I feel like that process takes time. In our situation at Uber, like we have such a big organization like for marketing that it was hard. Like, to be honest, we started building that relationship from the leaders and then trying to cascade down. But if you think about like all the different teams that we had to partner with, like we had brand, we had social media, we had performance marketing, we had creative. So it took time, and I don't think there's like one perfect way of doing so. What was really useful for us and what I would really recommend to other teams is like, maybe take advantage of projects. Like right now we are working in a project with a marketing team as we are revisiting and relaunching our company values. And we had the opportunity to working with creative and production and brand. So I think we took that project as an opportunity. We started building the relationships, and we plan on continue building that relationship onto next year and continue building on top of that.
I think that what Delfina said about showing the data and insights that are relevant for the other side is important, right? So as you know, like it's marketing is a function that and brand and marketing is a function that gives us a lot of data, and that's powerful, and sharing those insights with the marketing team can really help build bridges moving forward.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's an article that came out probably this week, and you know, I'm sure it's been in the news, you know, quite a few times. And you know, the reason that employees are quitting now, right, more than ever, it's not necessarily a lack of having the opportunity to give feedback. So I think your example that you just gave, Delfina, is great, right? Like, you know, you go through the interview process, like, would you still use Uber based on the interview process? You know, the number one reason I think that people are quitting is they feel that they're giving feedback, but nothing happens with it, right? So, you know, we always coach our clients all the time, and, you know, the exercise of, you know, running these, whatever those end of year surveys are called. So I haven't had enough coffee today. But running our employee engagement surveys, if you're not going to do anything with that data, then you probably shouldn't be even sending the questionnaire, right? And, you know, we find this all the time with a lot of organizations. You know, everyone seems to be pretty good at getting the data, but I think the challenge is people don't know what to do next, right? Yeah. So I'm curious, like, you know, from your experience, you know, Delfina, maybe we can expand on that answer or that point about, hey, like, you interviewed and found out, you know, boy, people would or would not be more likely to use, you know, Uber based on their interview experience. And like, what happens next with the feedback, right? Or like, how do you make sure that we're actually taking action for the results? So maybe, you know, I wonder if there's a good story in there for the like, hey, at Uber, we've, you know, we learned this from our surveys and here's some changes that we've actually made.
This is a super timely question, because actually my team is starting to take over the candidate survey and the candidate dashboard. To be honest, we're in the process of building the dashboard, making sure that we have all the information that we need. And what my team is going to be doing is like really analyzing this data and then going back to our business with recommendations. So we're in this process. If you have any best practices, I'm all open for them, because like we are going to be thinking through this strategy right now that we are finalizing the dashboard, and then we're taking over this for next year. So yeah, I think that would be my answer. We're really in the process of doing this. What I can tell you is, like, a few years ago, like, we did a lot of research, and that research was a research that really informed our current EVP. So we do the research, we do ask the questions, and then we take all of those insights to make sure that we really go back to our employees and understand what is it that we need to improve in terms of processes, and then, of course, in terms of positioning and awareness externally with our new EVP.
Yeah, and what I wanted to say is, like, we're taking that more intentionally now, right, with the candidate survey, because we also revamp the questions. We partner with our people research team to make sure that the questions were relevant, and because, like, we thought a few months ago that the questions were not giving us the insight that we needed. So we are in that process of revamp. But in general, any questionnaire that we send needs to have an action behind. And what we do with the surveys that we send out, right, is there's always an action plan, and it always informs our strategy. So in the case of the candidate survey, definitely there will be a plan when we start gathering the results in a comprehensive dashboard, and we will make sure that there's activation behind it. There's been some activation in other surveys that we've run, like we were talking about the COVID-19 examples, right? So that's a very recent example. Like, we ask our employees before designing our return to office policy, and that is something that has been designed, right? And our return to, like, our working policy right now and our remote working policy is informed with the opinions of our employees, what they told us directly.
I love that idea. You know, I think this is a good call out that, you know, if you want to close that feedback loop, as I was talking about earlier, the time to be thinking about that is when you're actually designing the survey. It's not after the results come in, because I think if you wait until after the results come in, it's kind of kicking the can down the road, and you often just, nobody knows what to do with the results when they're there. But if, as you're designing a survey and you say, this is the question we want to ask, and then you really push the team to say, well, why are we asking this question, and what are we going to do with the results? You know, you can even sort of game it out and say, you know, if the results say this, then what would we do about it as an organization? You know, who would get this data, and what are we prepared to do in terms of changing the way we treat our employees or our candidates? And I think if you start there, you know, and you have that clear plan from the beginning before you even get a single survey response back, you're just much better positioned to actually close the feedback loop and do something about it.
Yeah, I love the way that you're saying it, right? And that I think that goes for any data that we look at. We have a lot of conversations with business leadership, and we oftentimes are asked for data. And when you question the why, right? Why do you need this data? What are you going to do with it? That's when the conversation gets interesting, because sometimes it's just like, well, I just want to see it because I'm curious. And you're like, yeah, but why? Why are you curious, right? You need to get behind the why and the action. Like, what is this data going to inform? What are you going to do with it?
Yeah. Well, I want to switch gears a little bit because I know you guys have recently updated or unleashed a new EVP. You know, you'll tell me if I'm getting this wrong, but it's something along the lines of go anywhere, get anything. And I think what's interesting about it, at least from my perspective, is this is pretty strongly aligned with the company's broader mission. You know, oftentimes when you see companies talking about an EVP, it doesn't necessarily connect. You know, you'd hear them talking about work-life balance, compensation, remote work is becoming more common. And certainly those dimensions of an employer brand are important. But ultimately, the whole reason to have an employer brand is to further the mission of the company. And by connecting the employer brand with the corporate brand or the consumer brand, in the way that I think Uber is doing it, you're really building a stronger brand, because that is how you differentiate yourself both to the consumers that you're serving and to the prospective talent that you're trying to attract. I wonder if you could just briefly talk about this new EVP. First of all, did I get it right? You know, this idea of go anywhere, get anything, it's pretty clear to understand what that means to the consumer of Uber. You know, we're all used to most everyone has taken an Uber ride or ordered Uber Eats. So I think that idea rings true pretty clearly for consumers. But what does that idea mean to employees and to prospective employees?
Yeah, you're getting the concept right. We're still finessing the wording because we haven't launched the EVP and all the assets and the career side, but it's coming soon. But it's that concept of go get it, and that is very core to Uber. you access the Uber app we want for people to be able to go where they want to be and get what they want. And we want to translate that concept when people are thinking about their own careers in the company. So for Uber employees to be able to access career growth opportunities quickly and drive their career to where they want to be. And so it's that same concept, telling the story of how it is to work in different teams at Uber so that you can better inform your choices if you're not in the company from the outside, if you're in the company from the inside, and then provide access to this talent marketplace where you can access short-term opportunities to join other teams, training programs, or even permanent roles, which seems to be the most obvious. And just apply and get easily and faster than anywhere else the career that you want to have.
Yeah, and I think, of course, adding on to that, like, of course, we use the go anywhere, get anything. But at the same time, we did have to proof test this with our company values and then make sure that this was aligned to our employees and future employees. So our final EVP goes more towards going fast, far, and together. So we use this go anywhere, get anything, and we are going to start talking about go-getters. Like, you're going to start seeing that in our career set and everything that we do moving forward, because we are indeed go-getters. But at the same time, we are also collaborators. So yes, we go get it. Yes, we move fast. But at the same time, we also move together. So that's a little bit of the message more aligned to the EVP.
I think that's just a really brilliant way of doing it. It's a great example because, you know, often EVPs are just so generic and you know, it's like, our people are our most valuable asset. You hear that a lot. What does that even mean? I don't think anyone quite knows. I mean, of course your people should be your most valuable asset. But what Uber is doing here is really connecting the EVP to the consumer brand and what the company itself stands for. You know, if you think about what the feeling is like to pull out your smartphone and know that you can summon a ride within 5 minutes or you can order food. I mean, that's very empowering as a consumer, and it gives you a sense that you can do a lot of things quickly just in the palm of your hand. In a similar way, what I'm hearing from you guys is you're trying to cultivate a similar feeling for the employee and the employee experience. So yes, you have a certain job, but nobody wants to feel like they're stagnant or stuck in a certain role and have no opportunity to experience mobility in their careers. So you're really kind of connecting the idea of mobility, which has these clear implications for consumers, with the idea of internal mobility. Is that a fair way of summarizing?
Yeah, that's a great way of summarizing it.
While we're on the topic of employer brand, I always have to ask our guests, because you know it's partly selfish because I want to know how organizations are doing this, and partly for our audience, because I think a lot of people are having trouble understanding. How do you measure the ROI of employer brand investments? You know, on the one hand, if you think about investing in brand, it can't always be neatly tied back to clicks and applications. You know, some cases you're just trying to get awareness out. In some cases you're trying to establish your new EVP in the marketplace and really plant those ideas in the minds of prospective talent. And that clearly has value for the organization, but you can't always say, you know, we spent $50,000 on an employer brand campaign and it led to X number of hires. Sometimes drawing those dots is hard. I'm just wondering what your experience has been and, you know, what metrics do you use to make the case to executives that the money that we're putting into these employer brand initiatives are actually generating a good return on their investment?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, and that's definitely a challenge. What we try to do is differentiate what we can really impact on the short term and we can measure on the short term, and then what's more long term. And to be honest, the long term, we are super clear, like sometimes changing the perception, working more on telling the story and generating awareness takes a lot more time. And sometimes it's a little bit more intangible, so harder to measure. So in terms of measuring ROI and showing and reporting to our leadership team, we're still working through it. Like, we have so many channels, so many job boards, and so many metrics all over the place, that what we are trying to do right now is really have like one source of truth, like unified or centralized way of measuring and reporting. So right now I'm in the middle of the process with my team of doing an exercise of really understanding what are those maybe 3, 4, 5 key metrics that we can impact as a team, and also understanding if those metrics are 100% under our scope and impact, or maybe we have a dependency on recruiting. So we are, again, trying to find a good way of doing this, because like again, paid media, it's always easier to measure and track and report, but then with organic or with employee advocacy, that's harder to do so. So we, again, we do have lots of different metrics throughout the funnel. So what we basically try to do and measure is like most, like on top of the funnel and awareness, like we see at, we look at number of followers, reach, views, of course. And then we do try to see how those metrics convert to engagement. So like click-through rates or acceptance rates. And then, of course, going to the actual impact of everything that we do is like going to see those number of applies, those conversion rates, and the actual hire. So we have those, that mix of both metrics. And again, like we are super transparent on the fact that there are some things that are more longer term and harder to measure. And then some other things that we can really say that they are actually translating to hires. I don't know if that makes sense.
So Duffy, do you think that that's been harder or easier to, you know, get across to the business, you know, having the business understand that like, hey, many times, you know, your employer brand is a long tail or, you know, longer strategy where you're not going to have an immediate payoff. Like, are you finding that the business is, you know, easily accepting of that fact? Or are there maybe certain people in the business where they, you know, yeah, hey, they want concrete numbers and concrete, you know, data right out the gate?
Look, I think it's both. Because they need to hire and because we have such aggressive hiring targets right now on the market, it's so challenging. I think on one side, they have, like, they want these short-term results and see the applicants and see the hires. But at the same time, for example, with Eng, we were talking about engineers before and tech talent, like they know that we have to do a bigger work there. So they also understand the need of us going to do a little bit of more research and telling the story and positioning Uber as a great place to work of, or as an employer of choice for engineers. So I think they do see the value of both. They need the short-term results, but at the same time that they understand that we have to do like a longer-term work on awareness as well.
The awareness piece is a bit tougher, especially like in a tough market, is a tougher sell, right? And I think that goes for any function. If you're like trying to focus your leadership team in long term results, but they are pressed by the environment, right? That's always a harder sell. And right now, there's a very challenging labor market, as Sofina was saying. The good news is that we have, you know, we can start with the more short-term metrics, right, and build up, and that's what we've been doing, right? Like, and by gaining confidence in the short-term metrics, like we're like building sort of more towards the long-term and getting the necessary budget to do so.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the way we always talk about with our clients. As you know, we think about, you know, two phrases that we say a lot. One is, you know, how do we, you know, create a win for all environment, right? And like, you know, for us with our clients, you know, a lot of times that means like, hey, we may have, you know, 70% of what we do that we're going to tie directly to metrics like completed applications, right? Top of funnel metrics on, you know, clicks, right? Who's visiting our site from, you know, certain outlets, you know, but then we also want, you know, our clients that, you know, like recognize they need to do something different are the clients, you know, that are willing to set aside budgets to, you know, test new things. And that may mean, you know, hey, maybe we'll do something very wild and creative in a, you know, from a brand awareness perspective, you know, to help someone go into a new market in, you know, Colombia or in, you know, Tijuana, Mexico, right? Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, our clients have to also recognize, and whether that's, you know, in an Uber example, internal buyers, right? Or for us as external clients, that like, hey, like, we're testing things that are new, and success, you know, in this environment might be, you know, wildly different than going to a job board and buying applications.
Absolutely. And that resonates, right? And the great thing is that you can always test things and show them the results. And then they gain confidence at that. Like you see what does not work, right? So what you said is right. Sometimes it's like what they want is to pay for applications and you're like, yeah, but that's not going to work. And they're like, yeah, I still want to do it. You can still go for it and show them that it doesn't work, and then they will be more open to do something else. So sometimes it's a trial and error, right? And if your internal clients are, you know, open to invest and try things, like you can quickly see what does not work and get more of their buy-in for more out of the box ideas.
I do think, like, you know, that's a pretty interesting point there, Chavi, right? And I think, like, sometimes finding out what doesn't work is also success. And, you know, that mindset is not always easy for clients to pick up. Like, you know, sometimes it's success to know that investing in XYZ, you know, from a marketing standpoint is a failure, right? And, you know, that's okay, because you're, as long as you're still learning along the journey.
Absolutely. We are like big promoters of, I mean, I don't want to like call it like complete failures, right? That like as long as there's learning behind it, and that learning proposes you to the next big thing or to the thing that is going to work, right? That's, of course, you should be testing. That's what drives innovation. And you want to keep those creative juices and spirits in your company and in your function.
Yeah, I think it's just exciting to see that organizations are starting to take the idea of measuring the effect of employer brand seriously. You know, we had a guest on our podcast a couple months ago. Her name was Lindsay Peterson, and she's a consumer brand expert. And we had a pretty fascinating conversation with her about how you measure the value of a consumer brand. And one of the really great examples she brought up was Clorox bleach. Clorox is probably the leading brand of bleach in the United States. And, you know, bleach is a really good example because it's the same chemical material. There's literally no difference in terms of whether you buy Clorox bleach or a different generic form of bleach, what you're getting. And despite this, Clorox bleach over its, you know, 50 plus years of existence has maintained a dominant market share. And they're also charging like 50% more per unit of bleach. And yet people will continue to buy Clorox bleach. And the only difference there, because the product is exactly the same, is the brand. So this is sometimes called pricing power. And I'm just thinking, like, as we look to the future of employer brand, I think there's an opportunity to come up with a similar concept for measuring the value of an employer brand. I mean, if you would think about advertising a software engineering role with just a generic company name and understanding, you know, how much would it cost to get an application and how much would it cost to get a hire for this job description if it were just generically branded. And then do the same thing and put an Uber's logo on it and put your new EVP on it and measure the cost of getting an application and a hire. You know, it's a similar analogy here. There's something similar. It's not quite pricing power, but it's your ability to attract talent on the market and reducing the cost of doing so. I don't think that exists, but I think it's an interesting thing to think about as we think about the future of measuring the value of an employer brand.
Hmm. That's interesting. And you made me think a lot, like because you were mentioning the cost per hire, right? Or like that concept mm-hmm. of measuring cost. And I of course, like, it's really, really important, right? But like one of the things that I was discussing with my team is like sometimes the cost is it should not be our driver, right? Because if we're spending a lot of money but we're making hires that are gonna bring the amazing new product to the market. So like, I think that there's like also like an opportunity for us to connect the value of the work that we do to the bottom line, right? Like the divisions where we're hiring, where we're investing money to hire, how are they performing like in the bottom line? Connecting to the actual impact on the business bottom line, I think is something that is really powerful and still to be explored.
No, I agree. Absolutely. I mean, that's the great irony of, you know, why you see in organizations that employer brand and TA often aren't communicating at all with consumer marketing. I mean, the employees you hire are the face of the products and services you delivered. So it's very weird to me that they're not communicating more. I think that's beginning to change, but I think your point is well taken. I mean, it's hard to get that data. I mean, that's always the challenge, but it's yes, hard. If you can demonstrate that, you know, we hired this many people this year and they delivered this much value to the balance sheet through the work they did.
Yeah.
That's a great way of looking at it, I think.
It is harder, and I'm not saying that we're doing a good job at it, but I think it's I would love for talent acquisition to be seen as not only like a function where it's a cost saving function, right? It should be a revenue generating function, because that's the way that we change the conversation with our business leadership as well. So it is more complex, and it requires for us to get closer to our strategic finance folks that we're also doing, but it's definitely worth doing.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. And, you know, it's a good call out, right? Like the clients that, you know, maybe I'd argue say we have the most fun working with, and, you know, I would use that word, you know, it's the ones where, you know, they recognize the direct correlation between, you know, who we're hiring and how it affects the bottom line of the business, right? Their business's ability to function. And, you know, that's when this gets exciting in recruiting, right? In recruitment marketing, when, you know, we're able to connect, hey, if we're going to hire, you know, 10 heads in a certain location, we know how much more profitable or, you know, we're talking with a CFO about how much more profitable the business is, you know, by adding 10 heads. And, you know, it is difficult, right? Mm-hmm. It is difficult to find, but those are the fun conversations, you know, because you're actually, you know, you feel a very, very strong connection to, frankly, the success of the business, and it's directly tied to recruiting.
Yeah, definitely. On a personal note, I think that's what I love about recruiting. When I used to be working in recruiting in LATAM, like, I was literally building the teams that were going to be launching Uber Eats in Latin America. So it was so tangible because literally it was me building the whole team. And then that was a team launching the market before our competitor. So when you see that direct impact, it's super, super satisfying. Yeah.
It's I agree with Delfina. Like, some of my best memories of my time in the EMEA region was hiring or working in the hiring sprints for the EMEA region, and then seeing the Uber Eats bags like appearing in the streets of cities, right? That's just it's very powerful, and it connects you directly to the work that you're doing.
That's fantastic. Well, one question I do want to close with, and then we'll end with an even easier one. So, you know, we're recording this podcast. Marty and I are in Denver. You know, we live in Seattle, of course. You know, Nicole and our team lives in Houston. You know, I think we've got maybe three countries covered right now on this podcast episode. But like, if COVID's taught us anything, you know, there's been, you know, everyone flipped the switch to working remote overnight, you know, but now you're seeing a lot of tech companies slowly talk about, you know, the return to the office and what, if anything, that's going to look like. You know, I'm curious, you know, what, you know, if you have any opinions, you know, Xavi or Delfina, on return to office and how that's going to, you know, how is Uber expecting that to, you know, impact its ability to, you know, attract talent? Is that, you know, turning into more of an opportunity for companies, or, you know, more of a barrier, you know, for companies, you know, when it comes to talent attraction?
I can say, I think it's a little bit of both, and it's returning a little bit to the conversation that we had about what is the right talent for your organization, right? And what is the type of culture that you want to build? And of course, like, considering the market trends and the talent availability, right? And what people want. I do think that it's an opportunity for companies to adjust. We are fortunate that we were a pretty flexible company before COVID hit, and we have a lot of office locations. We have even, I don't think that we had like a very prescriptive working from home or remote policy before COVID, but that gave us the opportunity to put it in writing and to make sure that it was informed with what our employees wanted and needed. Where we landed as an organization is a bit of a hybrid setup, where we have a 50-50 setup for most roles in the company, and people can go to the office to build personal connections whenever it's safe, but they also can work 50% of the time from home. And then for remote and change of locations, we have enabled a process for people to request changes of locations or remote work. And we have changed the policy, I think, once already in the last 6 months, because we keep our ears to the ground. And I think that that's what's most important, right? To stay connected to your employees and adjust the policies as things change and as the market changes as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Like, you know, always if you're not, you know, the world was very different 2 years ago than it was, you know, last year. And frankly, then it'll probably be 6 months from now too. And, you know, it's that, you know, the mindset of continually, you know, trying to understand what your employees or target talent are looking for, really. You know, and then, you know, as we've hit on more than a few times in this episode, the ability to take that data and actually do something with it, right? You know, make changes.
Right. You were asking, like, what can you do with the questions that you ask your employees? Well, you know, informing your policies is a great one, right? And in this case, yeah, like a return to office is a very clear policy that all companies need to work on.
Yep. Awesome. Well, I think that's a great place for us to hit pause in this episode. I think we'll end with the easiest question. You know, we'll certainly link everything in the show notes, including that article from Link Humans and that podcast episode too. But, you know, Delphi, you know, Xavi, where can people connect with you on LinkedIn if they want to learn a little bit more about Uber? Where's the best place for people to find more about you online?
on my side, if you want to connect with me, it's always on LinkedIn. And if you want to learn a little bit more about Uber, that also can be on LinkedIn, but then we also have our careers page. So that's uber.com/careers, and then our careers blog, but that's uber.com/blog/careers.
And from my side, also on LinkedIn, Xavi Martinez Salcido. And then I'm also active on Twitter, and I have the handle at Future Xavi. So that's Future and then my first name, X-A-V-I.
Yes, great. So should here's another question then. Should we be more active on Twitter? Marty and I have this discussion frequently. I read a lot on Twitter, but I'm not tweeting much. So Xavi, are we missing something?
I think you have to invest a lot of time in curating content, and it depends on who you want to connect with. I find there's a lot of marketing folks on Twitter, for sure. They're much more active than the HR folks that are, I find, more on LinkedIn. Really depends what you're after. I've been in and out of Twitter for a while, but now I'm back.
Awesome. Well, I'm always lurking on Twitter. It's more, I wonder what Elon Musk is saying, in a given week for the most part. Seeing if everyone's pro or down on Bitcoin for the week. So awesome. All right. Well, we'll send our burrito recommendations your way, Xavi, and really appreciate you both joining us for the episode, and looking forward to, following along as Uber launches its new EVP in the coming months.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. As always, head on over to changestate.io or shoot us a note on all the social media. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll check you guys next week.